Welcome to Alphabet Scoop once again for those who are tuning in for the first time. This is a podcast from the team at 9to5google.com where we cover everything that's happening in the world of Google from A to Z. So thanks a lot for joining us as usual. For those who are just now turning in, this show is where we share our thoughts on the week's most important Google stories, and faithful to the show's name, we will do our best to throw in some rumors and mini scooplets whenever we can. So let's get started. I'm Stephen Hall, and this is my colleague Abner Lee. How's it going, Abner?
Awesome. It is episode 5. Nice roundish number.
Today's episode is starting off on a particularly special note because something we talked about in our very first episode of Alphabet Scoop, well, I guess the first official episode, was Android P navigation. Basically, we said that Android P is getting a new iPhone X-like user interface.
Yep, and today, in a blog on the Android developers blog, talking about security in Android P, there was a screenshot from Android P that showed a new navbar. This navbar that we were talking about.
Yeah, so it's actually funny because a lot of our readers, you know, wouldn't know this, but I actually had some renders put together. Well, I was trying to put some renders together on my own in Photoshop because we were told about this exact design, which is this pill-based home button on the bottom, no multitasking button. And so I was trying to put something very basic together. And I actually have a few files sitting on my desktop right now that look very similar to the screenshot that Google accidentally leaked just a couple hours ago. So they never got out because I didn't feel confident enough, I guess, but I guess I should have.
Yeah, we were 100% vindicated. So we have this pill-shaped icon in the center that replaces the current round home button. And in this particular screenshot, we see the back button, which is interestingly going back to the outline. It's no longer filled in.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that's going to work or how that's going to... I'm not really sure what the not filled in back button really signifies. I don't know if there's any significance to it, but we have heard, and I mentioned this a few weeks ago, that this back button is now kind of contextual. So basically, if you are, you know, for instance, this screenshot that Google leaked today has a window open that, you know, has a cancel button. In this case, pressing the back button will dismiss that window, presumably. And in other cases, perhaps in an app, it's sometimes confusing. You know, sometimes you can use the top left back arrow to go to navigate back a screen in some of Google's apps, or you could use the back button in the navigation bar. But apparently, with this upcoming build of Android P, this back button is going to be contextual. So in some places where there's no reason to have a back button, for instance, the home screen, I'm told specifically that the home screen in this build that my source has seen, I'm told specifically that there is no back button showing whenever you're just viewing the home screen. So The back button's contextual.
That is good. That is very good to hear, because from a symmetrical standpoint, this is horrendous without a matching multitasking button. But anyways, maybe the reason it's hollow is to convey that it's just a temporary button and just to make it as minimal as possible. So that's probably why we're going back to this pre-Nougat design, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually kind of imagining what that would look like. So, like, my source told me that the back button kind of disappears when, like I said, when there's no contextual reason for it to be there. I was thinking kind of similar to the way the home button works on the Pixel 2 right now. So, like, after all that debacle went down with the Pixel 2 XL, and there was screen burn-in problems, Google made it so that the navigation bar buttons kind of faded out a little bit. And so I was thinking that maybe that was what Google was going to do with the back button. But it looks like maybe instead they're just going to use this outline design, the old outline design, to just represent that it's not a permanent affixed button anymore.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, there is no recent/multitasking button anymore. Why is that?
That's because, as I said, it's going the way of the iPhone X. Basically, you swipe up from the pill based on what we've heard, and it opens up a multitasking screen. We're actually working right now to put together some renders so that we can kind of show off exactly what I'm describing here, because words don't exactly do it justice. But you can apparently swipe up from the pill, and it will open up a multitasking screen that's very similar to the one that you see on the iPhone X. If you look up iPhone X navigation or multitasking, you might be able to get a good idea of how this works. Basically Google's copying Apple.
For the multitasking gesture, the pill, from what we're seeing right now on this one screenshot, and maybe it's early, it's a bit small. It's really small. It's a really small touch target. That's a bit worrisome, actually.
I agree. Final. Yeah, I agree. I think I like the iPhone X's, the thin bar on the bottom, and that's another topic that we can touch on, is that the iPhone X gets rid of, you know, the physical place where the home button was on older iPhones, and allows you to just have this full screen. Whereas on this build of Android P, which we just saw leaked today, and the one we've been describing for a few weeks, you still have the entire space where the navigation bar is. And now it seems like that space is wasted.
And you can, in the screenshot that Google leaked, you can still see that line separator between the system navigation bar and the app above it. It's a bit jarring, and it's not a good use of space.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what will happen when Developer Preview 2 comes out. Maybe the screenshot that we saw today is, you know, a developer, you know, obviously it's an internal build, but, you know, maybe they're still working on how this is going to look. And maybe when it comes out, maybe this pill will actually look a lot more similar to the way that Apple does it with the iPhone X. The other idea that I've had is that maybe this navigation bar hides itself, like we've seen on custom builds of Android from various OEMs.
Ooh, that would be interesting. We would really be going into this like a swipe up gesture to review it in the first place. That might be a bit confusing.
Right. That would be confusing. You swiping up to reveal the navigation bar potentially, and then swiping up again to go to multi. Yeah, that would probably become a mess. But you know, this screenshot from Google by itself would be significant. But the fact that we had an entirely separate person telling us about this exact design a month ago says, you know, that this is more than just, you know, something that might be testing on a few phones. This is probably the direction that Google's going. And I agree with, you know, some commentary I've seen on Twitter that, you know, this is an okay thing for Google to just straight copy Apple on. I'm totally fine with it.
Yeah, definitely. Because a big complaint of Android, from iOS people, is how the back navigation is so inconsistent. Having two places where you can go back, one in the top corner and one in the bottom, as you said before, is just confusing to people. Why would you take up two spaces for that?
Yeah, I don't know. But again, I mentioned this like last month, but Apple on iOS is really not doing that much better of a job nowadays.
So yeah, this new navbar design hopefully can help Google improve the consistency. And who knows, maybe this is part of a broader design strategy that we have yet to see for Android P.
Yeah, so we've been hearing, I think, for a couple months now that Google's working on more than a minor iteration on material design. And we're starting to see that popping up in some apps already, right?
Yeah. So we saw a Chromium commit at the end of last week that discussed Material Design 2. Specifically, it said, full-scale MD2 design is also in the works. This commit was talking about how the month before we heard rumors of a MD2 redesign for Chrome. But in fact, that what that commit was originally talking about was not MD2, but something called Touchable Chrome, which is meant to improve the desktop Chrome on touch devices like Windows convertibles and definitely Chrome OS, given how there's so many form factors in convertibles now. So this quote also said that Material Design 2 is, quote, still being designed and won't look like this in any case, end quote, with a possible release date of at the end of the year to celebrate Chrome's 10-year anniversary.
Yeah, I don't really know how to interpret these comments because, yeah, I guess there's two things that we're seeing. First of all, this touch-optimized Chrome does kind of look in line with the other things that we're calling Material Design 2 inspired. Like you can talk about in a second, the Google app and kind of what one of our new contributors is kind of working on for a concept of the Play Store. I think that's one thing that we're calling Material Design 2. And yet at the same time, this Googler, was it a Googler, said that, yep, Material Design 2 won't look like this. So I think that's just a really weird contradiction because there is definitely this new wider, flatter, kind of rounded edge. Yeah, rounded look that Google is clearly moving towards in various aspects. And so I guess that's what we're calling Material Design 2. And I would say that this new touch optimized Chrome, which we have screenshots of, looks along the same lines to me.
Yeah. And in Chrome for Android, there was a Chrome Home bottom bar redesign that was canceled from the looks of it. But it lives on in something called Modern Design, which again is a whiter interface. It has a rounded Omni bar, address bar top, the same bar that's basically on Android P at the top of the Settings app. And as we showed this week in the Google app, we were able to enable a MD2-like redesign that again shows this rounded search bar that is just popping up everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really a matter of semantics, kind of. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens at I/O because everything's pointing to, I mean, several products are looking to be timed kind of around that time that are going to get some kind of visual overhaul. Gmail is another one that on the web. We could talk about that one, but it looks like I/O is going to be, you know, visual changes are going to be potentially a topic there. I think we have some evidence that some sessions are reflecting that.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about a new material design, specifically the latest evolution of material design was how one session described it. Another said, quote, latest material tools and components, end quote. And a third session discussed how the, quote, the latest material design guidance. So there's clearly some movement on this front. And there was, as you said, there was definitely some inconsistency on the Chrome front. But I guess just a reminder, Google's general, how their design is architected is not top-down like Apple. It's more, there are a lot of separate design teams within the product groups, within Android, within Chrome. Google's has definitely moved towards more consistency, but as you can see from these different products, there's no real centralized mandate. It's more teams getting and coming up with their own designs.
Yeah, but I mean, there is kind of the foundation of material design, which we have seen propagated throughout the entire company.
That is true. But from the outside, it to explain some inconsistencies, it looks like it's still, at the end of the day, it's still somewhat up to the team, to the product team, to in how they want to implement it in their own products. But that's my idea anyways.
And yeah, I think kind of along this line, there's a few elements that Google added in the new design support library that was updated or the same time as Android P Developer Preview 1. I think one of the most interesting ones, and you can head over to 95google.com to check out the link for this. But one of the most interesting ones is bottom app bar, which is this element that's kind of like the Material Design app bar or action bar, which is the bar that you typically see at the top of apps, which has the three dots. What's the menu called?
The overflow
The
button.
overflow menu, the overflow button. So apparently, what I've heard from someone who's apparently privy to some information on what's happening on the Android P slash Android app design movement front is that Google's going to be pushing this bottom app bar, which is it kind of makes sense, considering how Android phones and phones in general just continue to be very big. And so I think having the overflow button and other aspects that might be part of the action bar or the app bar at the top are starting to become a little bit out of reach, or have been for a while. And so I'm hearing that the bottom app bar is going to be a very important element for not just for what Google recommends for design of third-party apps, but also in Google's first-party apps as well, coming updates over the next several months. As well, I've heard that the tab buttons at the bottom of various Google apps, I think we see it in Google Photos, Google Plus. We've just been seeing that pop up more and more. I'm hearing that with Material Design 2 or whatever it is that Google announces in terms of the evolution of design at I/O, that that's also going to be even more kind of on the front of Google design in the coming months. So I'm excited. I think that those two elements, I mean, looking at the bottom app bar, it's really interesting. It has like a floating action button that kind of
At the center.
yeah, at the center, or it doesn't have to be at the center, but it kind of fills part of the app bar itself, and I think it's a really nice looking element. But I'm just excited to see how things keep changing. And I've always been a big fan of the tab buttons. I mean, that goes all the way back to iOS 1.0, I think. The bottom tab buttons for navigation. I mean, I think the very first music app on the very first iPhone was basically the pioneer of this design element on touchscreen devices. And I've always thought it was better than the hamburger menu, which has been long been kind of the primary navigation for Android devices. And I'm really, really glad that this is yet another area where Google has decided, yeah, Apple might have been right on this one.
Yeah, it's a part of a long move towards optimizing for experience rather than uniqueness, so to speak.
Yeah, and so on the topic of redesigns, we have a new Gmail experience, which we heard about and leaked in its entirety this week, right?
Yep, so Google began alerting its G Suite administrators that a new Gmail experience is coming over the next few weeks, and they gave us some features like smart reply, snoozing, easy access to Google Apps, and all these things that actually Google told us about last year were coming. But shortly after this memo to administrators, the entire thing leaked, and I don't know if Google was expecting that, but they should have. And
It's
what
so
if
funny that email says customer confidential at the top, and every single G Suite administrator in the whole world got this email. There's
and
got to be
sent it over?
exactly. I know Android Police got like 5 or 6 tips of, you know, just a copy of the email that literally a G Suite administrator literally just clicked forward on and sent it to, and we got 4 or 5 ourselves. And so it was just so funny to see that you know, Google labeled it like confidential. Don't send this. And administrators was just like, nah, we're just gonna forward it to the tip box of every Android and Google website on the internet.
And going a step further, it should be no surprise at all when these people start screenshotting the entire thing and sending it over to these media publications.
Yeah,
So,
so.
what we have is a new, it's a modernized Gmail, as I've been calling it. We see features like smart replies at the bottom of every message. We have snoozing, just like inbox, and just at the Android Oreo system level. But a really exciting thing we have is these plugins. They're like sidebar widgets that show Google Calendar, Google Keep, this new Google Task redesign, which is going to be interesting and hopefully unifies all of Google's reminders. Hopefully, please do that. And it's just an At the end of the day, it's not a major rethink of email like inbox tried to do, but it just updates everything and tries to make everything smarter, which was the stated goal of their design.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I think there's a couple things to note here. First of all, that this is a big deal because Gmail is the most popular, one of the most popular, if not the most popular, I'm not sure on the numbers, service that Google has. So this design is going to affect millions and millions of users. And I think it's just really interesting that, you know, seeing these modernizings of these web apps. Has been a long, long, slow crawl, hasn't it?
And
I think it started with Google Plus, maybe, which makes sense because Google Plus is probably the least popular of all of Google's web apps.
it took a big
And
and there was a big jump at Google Calendar next.
yeah, I actually wasn't. I feel like Google Calendar was more recent, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was definitely.
I mean, so before Google Calendar, we've seen it in Inbox. Inbox came out a while ago. You know, Drive got it at some point. We have articles, you know, in the archive for all of these things at 95 Google, but Drive got it at some point. YouTube got it relatively recently in like the last year, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Maps, I remember when Maps got it, I
Oh,
think
yeah.
a couple years ago. So basically, the story is Google has basically, I think, rolled this out as conservatively as possible, which makes sense. You know, whenever big redesigns are coming out, visual redesigns, they tend to be really jarring for people. And so Google doesn't want to have any mass exodus of any of their services.
Nope.
But I guess it makes sense that Gmail is one of the last ones, I think, to get this modernization because it's going to be hitting millions and millions and millions of people.
Definitely 1 billion. It is one of Google's 1 billion-plus user services. So yeah, one small design tweak we've been seeing in this new Gmail is bubbles. So the smart replies, the forward, the reply buttons, they're all encapsulated in these rounded, squarish bubbles. And also another place we're seeing them is the highlights for it when you're in Inbox or when you're in your Drafts folder. So that is part of another design change Google is going for.
Yeah, and speaking of inbox, I think we should just note here just how, you know, we don't have any idea the user numbers for inbox. We don't know how successful it's been. I would bet that the mobile app is exponentially more used than the web app. But it's really interesting, I think, how many features the new Gmail is borrowing from inbox. I think snooze is the big one. And then smart replies too. These are both features that Google. I'm starting to think that maybe Google used Inbox as a way to test these features, before introducing them to Gmail. Obviously that's the case. Obviously, Google would test things in Inbox before bringing them to Gmail. But I'm wondering if maybe part of the reason Inbox even existed in the first place, like maybe part of its actual existence is to serve as a platform to test features for Gmail. Because Gmail's, so much bigger, and if they're testing features in Gmail, that's you're it's like anything with any super popular service, you're messing with power users, you're messing with people who rely on your service for critical needs every single day for their job and their family and for emergencies and for everything. And so Gmail, I think, is really sensitive. It would be really sensitive to mess with. And I think Inbox may have served as maybe its primary purpose was to test features to bring to Gmail.
So when Inbox launched, my view of it was that Google was trying to reinvent email with Inbox by Gmail. I'm not sure if you had that same vibe, but they had new ideas for organizing. And I know that you've said in the past that one of the reasons you like Inbox so much is that you're basically only archiving. You're never deleting anything. You're just marking as read and hiding. And I think
Yeah.
that was Google trying to implement a new way to manage email where you have so much space that you never have to delete anything. And given that this, I don't think Inbox has reached 1 billion users, I think that what Google, this new Gmail experience is maybe admitting taking the best features and leaving the ones that Google tried to experiment with Inbox that didn't do so well out.
Yeah, I mean, and I've talked about my preference for Inbox on a previous episode, but for me, I think for me it's mostly a psychological thing. The actual function of using Gmail and using Inbox is the same, and that's obviously the case because if you it uses the same, data, it uses the same Inbox. So if you swipe done on an email in Inbox, the equivalent action in Gmail is clicking the archive button. And so everything that you do in either service, with the exception of snooze, which until Gmail is updated, didn't have an equivalent feature in Gmail. And so snoozing an email in Inbox would do nothing on the Gmail side. But pretty much everything you did in Inbox had an equivalent action that would be the case in Gmail. And so really the difference is not the actual what you're actually doing with your email. The difference, well, I guess with the exception of snooze, but the difference is kind of a psychological thing. Inbox was like catering to people who want to treat their inbox as a to-do list and as, they want to reach inbox zero. They treat it as like something that you're just like swiping away and something you take an action on every single email. Whereas Gmail, I think for the vast majority of people, maybe you included, definitely me, sometimes my Gmail account will sit at 1,000 unread emails. And I think if I'm using my family as any example, I mean, I know my mom's inbox. I've seen her open it, and I've seen that number up in the tab that says 489 or something. And so, Gmail serves as more of a traditional email service. And so, yeah.
So it was a big software week from Google, but we also have some hardware news this week.
We do, and this is it's always so much fun when Google or a partner company of Google, usually a partner company of Google, if we're honest, leaks something that is about what Google itself is doing. And in this case, it was a Chinese manufacturer which had made an Android TV dongle, presumably at the order and direction of Google.
Because it has a
And
big honking G logo on it.
yes, a big product sans white bold G on the front. And it passed through the FCC.
And for the first day when it got leaked, it was out in the public. It wasn't, there was no confidentiality whatsoever. So that's why we know so much about this. It is basically a, it looks like a Chromecast, wouldn't you agree?
Oh yeah, totally. It looks like a Chromecast Ultra that's a little uglier.
Yes. And again, with that big giant G, so there's an HD, it connects to HDMI, it dongles off. I think there's a micro USB, maybe it's USB-C power to power it up. And there's this remote with a, it's a standard remote, but it has an assistant button.
The legitimacy of this leak was highly contentious because, like you're saying, the remote, it doesn't really look like a modern remote that Google would ship with a consumer product. It's using the old home button from Android KitKat, for instance. You know,
Oh,
that's it's
that's
old.
clutch.
It's old, and it just doesn't seem like in line with kind of the hardware. The very inspired designs that Google is shipping with hardware lately, you know, like you wouldn't see this product sitting alongside a Google Home Mini. You know, the
Yeah.
Mini is such an awesome design with, you know, the fabric, and you know, it's polished and put together, and this Android TV dongle is just the opposite. And so, you know, it's contentious. A lot of people thought, you know, there's no way this is real, and if it's real, there's no way it would be going through the FCC this early. And it's made by a sketchy Chinese manufacturer, to which I will say is not a very good argument. The Chinese manufacturer isn't, at least, because a random Chinese manufacturer also made the Pixel Buds. And quite frankly, if I had seen the abomination that is the Pixel Buds before Google announced it, I would not have believed, nor would I have wanted to believe, that Google was actually going to launch that product.
Such a regret, the Pixel Buds. I personally have gotten AirPods and they are miles better, even on Android. So that is my tiny Apple corner this week. But yeah, so this device passed. We know it's running Android TV because of the listing, but also because of the instruction manual, which clearly shows screenshots for Android TV.
Yeah,
Now,
Android Oreo based Android TV.
yeah. Why would there be an Android TV device in 2018? A dongle, mind you, which Google has never done. They've always stuck to set-top boxes. The Nexus Player comes to mind, and then the partner devices are always boxes or integrated directly into the TVs. So this was very odd on why it's running this OS in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the record, I am very I'm very for Google releasing this exact product or a product like this that is an Android TV box in dongle form. You know, we can talk in a minute kind of about the advantages that I see in Android TV over a simple Chromecast dongle, and especially if it was priced well, then I mean that's just another win in my mind. But back to your question of why now and why if this is real, which for the record I stand by. I kind of played devil's advocate on Twitter for this thing because
Everybody
it
was
seemed,
saying it's not real.
yeah, everyone was saying it's no, this is fake. There's no way this is real. But I think that it seemed too fake to be real, and it seemed too real to be fake. And so I couldn't I couldn't just write it off like some people were. But I think there might be a logical explanation for why we're seeing it right now. And I don't know, but one guy, Daniel Tyson, who is the editor at Ozdroid, he suggested that maybe it's an ADT1 replacement for developers at Google I/O. So that's an interesting suggestion.
ADT1 was released in 2014. It was given to some developers at I/O as the developer hardware for the first versions of Android TV. So the question of why they would release another developer hardware comes down to look at the Nexus Player. It is officially losing support. It is not getting Android P. It is stuck with one more year of security updates. And if Google is serious about Android TV, which there is this one session of what's new with Android TV at I/O, they do need to release hardware.
Yeah, I mean, if Google's kind of rebooting Android TV and they really want devs to, whatever they're doing with it and, potentially releasing some next major version or significant overhaul or something, if they want devs to develop for the platform, then they really need a Nexus device. And we could go down the Nexus TV rabbit hole, but I think that's kind of pointless. But I mean, really, that's what this looks like. It looks like it could be. I mean, I don't really know why the ADT1 was not considered. Well, I guess at the time, a Nexus device. The meanings of Nexus have kind of changed, I guess, over time. But I'm not sure why the ADT1 wasn't called a Nexus device because. I guess maybe, Google wanted to say that it was even less than a Nexus device or even more developer focused than a Nexus device. So it was kind of in a different category. But if I feel like now if Google released the Nexus device with Pixel in the picture, then it would kind of have the meaning of, no, this is specifically for developers because Google has moved past marketing Nexus devices at consumers at all. Well, obviously there hasn't been one since the last Nexus phones. But I think if Google was to rebirth the Nexus brand, I think that they could assign it. It would be really cool, I think, if they kind of, as an homage to the brand and, to the culture, it would be really cool if they branded this thing as potentially a developer-focused Android TV dongle that was branded Nexus. But I guess that's beyond the point. Regardless, I think that this guy from Ozdroid, he might be right that, the timing makes sense that this could be, if this is, we're 30 days out from I/O, and I think with the way FCC filings work, that would make sense. So I think in that sense, an ADT1 kind of replacement would make sense. And then in another sense, it's really interesting that, as you mentioned, it was public at first, and then they filed the confidentiality documents. So to me, what that signifies is, and I think to anyone who's witnessing this, is that this is not just a nothing burger, product from China. This is something that someone somewhere wants to protect. And if it has a big old G logo on it, then that someone is probably Google.
Yeah, that would be interesting because as we're going to I/O, let's see, Android Wear is rebranding to Wear OS, and it would be a prime time for Android TV to get some room in the sun. That's not a thing people
Yeah,
say.
for sure, for sure. But I think this goes back to, if say this is an ADT1 replacement, like this guy says, I mean, does that mean that we're gonna see products like this later this year? Is Google gonna release, so if ADT1 is to the Nexus player, and let's say this is, ADT2, if this is ADT2, then what is the equivalent to the Nexus player? Is Google going to release a Chromecast TV? I don't know what you would even call it.
You brought up the very good point that Chromecasts are cheap, and this definitely echoes an affordable. The by essentially looking like a Chromecast, it definitely goes after that mold of being cheap. We haven't seen many Chromecast updates in a long time. I think the Ultra was released with the original Pixel in 2016, so I think if we're going for an update, this fall might be the right time, and given the progress of hardware, why wouldn't you just include Android TV? Why wouldn't you just bundle it into the same Chromecast form factor? Might as well give people more. It wouldn't change how these would still be used as a Chromecast receiver. That fact wouldn't ch be changed. But so as long as they can keep the price down, I think they might as well reflect the advancements in technology and just add Android TV to it.
Yeah, what would you prefer? Would you prefer a Chromecast dongle, or would you prefer to have a device like this that's running the full-fledged OS?
As long as the functionality, the ease of use of being a quote a Google Cast device isn't destroyed in any way, might as well. If you can make it cheap, it could go after Apple TV, Roku TVs, Amazon Fire Sticks. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I was talking with David on Twitter about this week. Well, he didn't reply to me, so it was a one-way conversation. But he was arguing that, that the beauty of the Chromecast is basically its simplicity and how it's so much better to browse and find media to play on your phone and just cast it up to your television. And that if people's problems with Chromecast are that it doesn't have a remote, then why don't you just launch a Chromecast with a remote. And I can understand that argument, but I think for me personally, an aspect that I experience on a daily basis is that having Android TV, which I will say I use on my Leico, I don't even know how to say that brand name. Good thing it's dead. I use it on my Leico TV, and thankfully, even though it hasn't been gotten in a soft a soft even though it hasn't gotten a software update in over half a year now, it's still
Definitely the
running
pack
fine.
factor.
Yeah, it's still running fine. But anyways, I use Android TV on it every day, and there's an aspect of Android TV which is, you're sitting in a communal environment. You're in a living room with your wife or your family or your friends or whatever, and having a remote and being able to browse the Netflix app or browse the Hulu app or browse Spotify or whatever it is you're doing using a remote. It's a significant difference, I think, when you're with other people. When I'm by myself, I almost always will just pull up my phone and cast because, like David's saying, that makes sense and it's easier and it's better. But when I'm with my wife, I am always using the apps because we get to see together what it is we're browsing through. And if we're, choosing whether to watch The Office season 9 or season 6, obviously season 6. We get to talk about that and we can decide together what we're going to watch next. So for me, I think Android TV in a dongle would be like the ideal product. Perhaps Google should strip down Android TV though a little bit. I think my ideal product would be Android TV, but without all the other bloat, because at least in my experience, Android TV, I use like 4 apps and everything else in Android TV, every single thing is all just, wasted space.
Actually, this makes a lot of sense because there are rumors of Google making a gaming streaming service, and if you no longer need Android TV to also be able to run games, you could offload it, you could simplify Android TV, make it a pure home entertainment, and offload those gaming features to the cloud and this rumored gaming product.
Yeah, I mean, I think 1 + 1 = 2 there. I mean, I don't really think that the gaming features in Android TV have taken off at all. And so if Google's planning this gaming service, by all means, take it off. I would rather have the Android TV experience be literally 15 predefined apps that Google chooses that are, have to pass rigorous quality standards and are updated constantly. Than the current Android TV experience, which is 90% pointless and 10% useful, at least to me. So, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there.
So again, Google I/O is coming up, and this makes for a very opportune time to rebr to this makes a really opportune time to just simplify Android TV and tell developers this is the new thing. You should focus your apps appropriately.
Yeah, and so I think with that out of the way, other notable stories this week, we had a new HP Chromebook X2, right?
So it is the first detachable Chrome OS device. It follows up the new Chromebook tablet form factor with a 12.3-inch screen that you can remove, and the base actually looks so much like a Surface. It's quite funny. But yeah, so it's a power-packed device, Intel Core M3, 4 gigs of RAM, the standard Chromebook specs with all the ports that you would want. And it's interesting that it kind of looks like it's going after the iPad Pro, and it's doing a better job because it's cheaper at $599, and it gives you a stylus and a keyboard included for that price point.
Yeah, I think if I had an iPad Pro and an HP Chromebook X2 in front of me, I think looking at them both, I would probably choose the Chromebook, at least for my purposes. What I don't understand, and maybe you have some thoughts on this, is why has this not happened yet? Why has it been like half a decade of Chromebooks and we've never had a detachable yet?
So there was the Pixel C, which our good friend at Ars Technica, Ron Amadeo, found was originally likely going to run a Chrome OS. That was originally a Chrome OS device with that detachable magnetic keyboard arrangement. So clearly Google was thinking about this for a while now, and it's finally happening.
I guess they needed to have Android apps up and running and set up before they went this direction. But still, I think I wonder. I mean, even with Chrome OS the way it was before, having a detachable.
Maybe they needed to get the tablet side of the touch optimized tablet Chrome OS ready before they could do this. Additionally, what comes to mind for me is the price point. It starts at $599, this HP Chromebook X2, and it's still a bit more premium than the $200, $300 devices. So as Chrome OS matures, maybe where it finally allows hardware makers to go for more premium price points, and we're now at this evolution and stage where we can go premium, where we can no longer have to focus on being affordable. So that's an idea.
Yeah, I guess that makes complete sense. I think that's the obvious answer that maybe I'm missing, is that without Android apps, the value of having Chrome OS on a tablet isn't really there, I guess. But with Android apps, obviously you can use all those Android apps just the same way you would use them on an Android tablet. But yeah, it's still interesting to me that it's been this long and we finally have this specific kind or category. You know, we've had flip Chromebooks, you know, for years, but we haven't had a flip Chromebook that you could pull the keyboard off if you wanted to. So it's interesting. I think at $599, it'll be a compelling option for a lot of people, especially those that see the iPad Pro as too.
Expensive, like with everything else you have to buy, the add-ons.
Yeah, it's too expensive. And also, you know, kind of what we were talking about last week is that for productivity, especially for students, it's a little bit on the idealistic side of things. As we saw at Google's, or as we saw at Apple's education event, we talked about that on a previous episode. Whereas I think the Chromebook X2 does a much better job of meeting students where they are with their needs. And I think, you know, having Android apps in tablet form factor on top of it being a great productivity machine is going to make this a really compelling option for a lot of people.
Yep. So in other news, some minor news, the Google Pixel and Pixel XL, the original made by Google devices, are no longer available from Google, the Google Store, and Project Fi. So it's what is it, an 18-month lifespan, about?
Yeah, it's not as long as I thought. I thought it would last at least a couple years. It's just really interesting to me that it dropped off in the middle of the cycle, you know. I was expecting them to disappear when the Pixel 3 came out, and then, you know, kind of like
the Pixel 2 takes that spot.
Right. But it's, I guess, Google is maybe no longer... Maybe they're running low on stock or something.
Reflects how selling it at $100 off wasn't their original strategy. We're already seeing that they're making a mid-range device. So I guess Google just wants to make custom mid-range hardware rather than rely on Apple's old strategy of just discounting the older phone.
Yeah, but then again, I think with the mid-range phones we're talking about, at least as far as we know, Google's not doing a mid-range phone in the US, and then this is entirely about them no longer selling the Pixel and Pixel XL in the US. So, yeah, maybe Google's working on mid-range hardware, but as far as we know, that's only for India. Yeah, so going back to software, I think we had a lot of app news this week, as usual. What do we have this week, Abner?
So, Google Voice last week announced that voice over IP calling is finally coming, and this week Google began opening the beta, so you can make voice over IP calls on both Android and the web, and it, at the moment, still in beta. I had some roughness the afternoon it first started rolling out to users, but it's pretty solid, and I've already replaced Hangouts Dialer and disabled Hangouts on my phone. I've been waiting to do that for a long time because Google Voice, it works just fine. It's solid. It may not be the most interesting thing, but for the people who love Google Voice, and there are many, it's a lot. It was we were finally waiting for this for so long. Meanwhile, in other telephony news, the Google Phone app is opening up a beta program with one of the first features being direct to voicemail spam filtering. So you won't get interrupted anymore with the black with the you won't get interrupted anymore with the red suspected spam caller screen. And we've also seen with the latest beta version, the Google Phone app moving to a bottom bar redesign, as we talked about with Android P earlier. And yeah, that is the Google Phone news. So meanwhile, YouTube for Android is rolling out auto-playing videos in the home feed. This was contentious, with most people straight up not liking it. As you scroll through your home tab, just the home tab, videos will automatically play in silence, thankfully. And it's like how the web app, when you hover over a thumbnail, it plays a small clip. But this one is slightly more annoying because even as you scroll through the home tab and watch just like a few seconds, it gets added to your history, and that might not be quite effective. And lastly, the Google Play Store is adding inline app update change logs. This is a super nice and convenient feature so that you no longer have to go to an app listing. And by now, since it rolled out last week, everybody should be seeing it. And that is the week.
Thanks, Abner. I think what you meant in that last section was that it would be a super nice feature if change logs on the Play Store were ever accurate to the features that were actually rolling out in the version that you're getting on your phone.
Burn, Google.
And on that note, let's talk about I/O 2018, which is coming up in just a few weeks. We're really excited. We just got our badges. It'll be me, Abner,
Hey.
and Seth this year. And this week we got a new updated session list, which hint at some potential news at I/O.
Yeah, so very interestingly, Google Photos has a session. They have a main session with the description noting exciting updates. This is very weird. My thinking, my speculation, and it's just that, is maybe Google Photos is getting some sort of developer platform where developers can build on users' photos, something like that. I'm not sure, but why else would they be getting a whole 1 hour session at I/O unless there's a developer aspect? Meanwhile, they're also doing office hours by the Google Photos team, which is when developers can come in and talk about apps. It's all very confusing, but I think this is a good year. And Google. It's all very confusing, but I think this is a good time for Google Photos to get new features because they've always used I/O as a place to announce updates to one of their most popular Android and iOS products.
Yeah, and I'm just really excited for IO and potentially even recording a podcast. Maybe we'll do a special episode of Alphabet Scoop at Google IO 2018 next month. We might have Seth on. We might be able to do it live. We've been talking about potentially doing this show live before it's published as a podcast on all your favorite services. So you should let us know in the comments what you think of that. Would you really appreciate if we managed to set up a system where we're maybe doing a hangout or a Skype call and we live stream it on YouTube while we talk every week, and then publish it after we edit it the next morning? Or would you prefer this format? Just let us know in the comments. And yeah, we're really excited for IO. And until then, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Friday and publish every Saturday morning, as I mentioned. And you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms like iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts in the Google app, Google Play, and you can even listen on our site at 9to5google.com on Saturday mornings. So thanks for tuning in, as always. Thanks to Abner for joining me, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.